And good morning. Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday. My name is Beth Pike, and today we are going to broadcast the second of our conversations with four generations of the Bibb family, and they've lived in the east side of Kansas City. And as with many families that we have here in the area, they've had joy, they've had tragedy, victories, and also failures. And many of the problems that we see today have roots in policies and behaviors of the past. So our host today, David Bell, is going to be speaking with Mr. Bibbs Sr. and his son, T. And they're going to talk about their family, their life here in Kansas City, and how the political and educational and justice systems have actually shaped their lives. And then we want you to stay tuned because we'll have our calendar of events in the middle of the show. And as always, we have our 420 drug war news at the end of the show. But now it's David Bell and his guests.
Good morning. This is David Bell. You're listening to Jaws of Justice on 90.1 KKFI. I'm honored today to have, as my guest, as I had a few weeks ago, Mr. Thomas Bibbs Sr. and his son T. They've lived in the Kansas City, Missouri area, I believe, all their lives. For the most part, I think there was some part, Mr. Bibbs Sr. in KCK, I think you had mentioned before. But in any event, I want to get to why we're here, what we're going to talk about. You know, with the election and Trump winning, and obviously the, you know, half the country's in fear of what's going to happen, half the country's elated of what's going to happen. What I find fascinating about that is those are emotions, the way we felt the next day, regardless of how you felt. But I'm not sure what that gets done. I'm not sure how the ball is moved forward by any of that. And so what I want to jump to are individuals like both of you that are actually doing something physically on the ground to make an actual change. Because I don't know Trump being elected. I don't know when, if that's going to hurt me or help me. I don't know how that's going to percolate down to me at some point in the future. But I can tell you that my experience the past week and going to your community center, I can see that you're making day-to-day, minute-by-minute changes in people's lives. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about a little bit today, and talk about the idea of community, not just the community that you're working with locally, but then how we broaden that out to a community nationally. So then we ultimately get together and have a discussion, whether it's between two races, between religions, between genders, whatever it may be. We come to a conclusion, what community is it that we are actually trying to build here, rather than two sides just hollering and screaming at each other. I was honored this week to be invited to the Palestine Neighborhood Development Corporation that's run by Mr. Bibbs and his son T. And I was invited to come in for a meeting, to sit down and have a meal, just to kind of watch and observe. And I was really impressed with the way in which it provided, what is unusual, at least in my experiences today, a place where people can come and share thoughts, ideas, rub elbows with each other, a gathering spot for people that maybe need something, maybe need a little bit of inspiration, maybe just want to sit and chat, maybe want to come in to help people, whatever it may be, people coming in and giving, people coming in and taking, but regardless of which side it's on, impacting the local community that it's in. And Mr. Bibbs Sr., I don't know if briefly you could, if you'd be willing to speak just very briefly about the Palestine Neighborhood Development Corporation and a brief history of it, so our listeners can have an idea of what I experienced last week.
I can speak to that, David. And first, I want to thank you for having us on your show here. I think your description, your experiencing in visiting us is very well described. And we enjoyed having you come and see what we do. We have been a neighborhood organization for over 40 years at that location, 35th in Indiana. We are a very diverse organization. In our neighborhood people, as neighborhoods have changed or people move in, people move out, and of course we're trying to level this to a point where more people are moving in than are moving out. We are gathering some success in that direction. We're trying to develop and provide housing to bring businesses into the community and to have a community where people have everything in that community. There's no reason to go outside of your community, particularly for anything. while we're in building this coalition of people, we have various neighborhood organizations and their boundaries, and we try to partner with those other neighborhood organizations on our east side, west side, all sides of the geographics of that neighborhood. We are being successful in this. We have development going on in the neighborhoods now where housing buildings are being refurbished where people can move in. We're trying to work with the schools and other civic organizations in the area to continue that development and bring it up to a level that we will see the fruits of our labor. And we're successful at that so far, and we will continue to work in that vein. You mentioned the recent presidential election that has gone on. And of course, our view has been, I've oftentimes thought that the office of the President of the United States really make the man who occupies that office. And we're going to continue to do as we do in our building, and I expect positive results from these actions that we are taking.
When, you know, and I know last time we were here, T, you spoke about Mr. Jones, this kind of a figure of someone who would be there to bestow wisdom on the younger generation. I have to tell you that when I was there at the community center, when I was sitting at the table eating lunch and just listening to people talking, I got the sense that that would be a place where both Mr. Jones would be holding court and where individuals could come for nourishment. In fact, I saw someone there coming there actually for food, but at the same time, in my mind, I could see someone there coming for advice or counsel or wisdom. Is that also what's going on there at the community center?
Okay, let me take this one. First, before I get started, I want to issue a disclaimer in that the statements made by myself and my father or not necessarily reflective upon the mission and policy statement of Palestine Neighborhood Development Corporation. I would implore listeners not to take it as such. We are definitely not here to cause any type of controversy. We're not here to take sides of a given issue one way or another. We are here merely to relate our own individual experiences and personal observations. And now with that being said, I'm going to answer your question. Mr. Jones has always been around in my neighborhood in one shape, form, or fashion. And as far as what Mr. Jones would do, well, yeah, he talked to the youngsters, tried to keep them in line. He looked out for the single mothers, you know, when they needed help with the children, whether it was discipline or whether it was nourishment. At our community center, we invite young people to come in. If you're having a bad day, or somebody's bullying you, somebody's chasing you, what have you, you can come in here. We'll try to do what we can to help you with that. It takes a village to raise a child. And when I was coming up, if you were three blocks from home and you broke a window, the news of that offense would get to the house before you did because of neighborhood networking.
Right.
Well, and again, this is merely an opinion on my part. It's not to say whether it's true or false, but the shift in attitude toward the disciplining of our youngsters has, to me, from my observation, has done more harm than good, because when I was coming up, the thought of calling the police on or the authorities on your own parents was ludicrous. But now it's done on a regular basis. And unfortunately, once that happens and the police respond, then the parent is stripped of a degree of power.
Absolutely.
But it is what it is. We would prefer that the young people in our neighborhoods would be willing to give the older person the respect that they have earned for living to be as long as, I mean, up to the age that they've gotten to. But in many cases, the young person has a very poor, very low opinion of the male figure because he feels abandoned. I don't know what the solution to that is. I mean, I try to encourage the young people. The younger ones, I just simply ask, are you being good? Are you doing what you're supposed to do? The older teens and what have you, how you doing, young man? How you doing, young woman? I will say this, that the youth feel anger, hostility, and resentment because they don't feel included in the social development, those things that are going on around them. They don't feel that they're being asked their opinions, or they don't feel that a place is being made for them in these things that go on, whether it's the presidential election or whether it's the development of the airport here in Kansas City. The young people are constantly searching for their own place.
But isn't the community center a place where that could happen, or does it happen there?
We invite the young people to come.
And do they come? And do they?
They come. They do come. But see, our community center is but one of many.
Right.
And not necessarily all the community centers are on the same page on that issue. When I first started working at the community center, it was primarily geared toward the service of a senior citizen demographic. I suggested, a mere suggestion, that we relax that to try to get a greater level of engagement by the young people who ultimately will be taking over the neighborhood in 20 years from now.
Right.
Well, it hadn't gone as well as we'd like up to this point, and unfortunately, as a side note to my starting there at the community center, the first year that I worked there, the first summer I worked there, there was a young person killed at every corner of the compass in that first summer. They suffered a violent death. I don't know. We may have been able to save one. We may have been able to save all, but there's a saying in my neighborhood that you can't save somebody who doesn't want to be saved.
Right.
So whereas we keep the door open, and I do a lot of community outreach. I'm on the ground. I'm actually on the ground, whether I'm walking or driving through the neighborhoods, to let people know what we do and where we are. And I'd also like to point another thing out, that my father and myself have taken courses in mediation and arbitration, so that we had an instance where two neighbors had a dispute and everybody couldn't get together. Well, the one lady came and asked us to set up the arbitration. Unfortunately, she couldn't get the other person to come in.
Right.
Now, conversely, this is what it's come to now, mediation and arbitration. But when I was coming up, in any given neighborhood, there was a Mr. Jones counterpart. And you could say that this Mr. Jones dealt more with the criminal element than the regular societal norm.
Right.
But he provided much the same service. If the man was mistreating his wife or his children, this Mr. Jones would step in, and he would get his guy talking to. And most cases that would suffice. There could be a financial dispute. This Mr. Jones would call both parties to the table, and the guy who owed money was directed to empty his pockets. And whatever he put on the table, that Mr. Jones would seize it, and he would divide it. Right. He would take a cut for right. his service.
Right.
And the man who was owed money would get a percentage of his money. He may not get 100%. And if there's anything left, the guy who caused the whole thing left with a couple of dollars in his pocket. But if there's nothing left, there's nothing left.
So what I see now in my job as a criminal defense attorney, and the point you brought up, T, is the smallest problem mandates in people's minds today a call to the police, as if the police and the government offer the solution. And I don't really view it that way. I view it that's the backstop. That's the at the point where, you know, two people can't get together and talk about it and figure it out with a Mr. Jones or Mr. Jones counterpart. And so we look to the government to solve problems. It sounds like could be solved within the community if we had that community structure. And I wonder if our increasing dependence on government, and I'm not talking about financial and stuff like that, I'm talking about an increasing dependence on government to solve normal daily problems and interactions between two people in a neighborhood, if our increasing dependency on that has weakened the community also. And I don't know, Mr. Bibbs, what's your thought on that? And I don't know if that rings true in your experience. If that dependency has caused a dissipation, the community to dissipate to a certain extent because they're not looking to community figures for help.
Well, keep in mind, David, that inclusion, especially for the young people, is critical. And this is the component that has been left lacking. Inclusion key to everything in the community that goes on. Now, I don't think so much that they lean to the government for solutions, because they have passed an element where the government has very little hands-on. And that, again, is a critical word for the young people in the community. Very little hands-on at all. So if we can get them to just get in gear with what's going on in the neighborhood, work with the community, and be included, that's the key. We want to include them in every component of this neighborhood. That's the jobs, the rentals, the educational component, critical with the schools and so forth. This is what our effort has been, to bring these components in the community together, the young, the old, the medium, the working, the work, just to bring them all together so that they operate as one in this community with one thing in mind, and that's building a community. Now, we identify a community as being self-sufficient, another key component. That is that a youngster can go to school, and in school he can get his education and his exposure to living in that community and being an integral part of working with and building that community. Inclusion, that is the key component, inclusion.
So we're talking about inclusion, self-sufficiency, participation is part of that. Inclusion. And so I know when I was meeting with both of you and others at the community center, we started to talk about individuals moving in, and I don't know if the reason that you were dealing with more senior citizens at first and now you're opening that up is it's just by virtue of the fact that you've got younger people moving in now.
Yes.
And so I'm wondering, it sounds to me, at least when we were talking, the first thing you need to make Palestine a Neighborhood Development Corporation more of a success, at least at this moment in history right now, is do you need a mass of people there to bring up to permit inclusion, to permit self-reliance, so you're not going outside the neighborhood to buy groceries or gas or a tailor or barbershop or whatever it is we would normally go to on a day-to-day basis? Is that kind of what we're...
This is exactly what we are focusing on, is to have everything right there in the community. Verified, because the young have always been with us,
right,
and they will always be with us. Inclusion, again, is the key. We want them included in every component that is, from the school to running the community as a whole.
So what's the roadblock right now? I know there's maybe many roadblocks, but what is a roadblock that you're coming across?
The roadblock that we're coming across is to get them included in the building, the rental, the components that make a community. They need to be involved or some spot for them in everything that you build, in everything that you sell, in everything that you open in your community. Have to be inclusion for everybody.
Right.
This diversity that we have, we've got to include everybody in it, the young and the old alike.
And T, is the idea if my friend's father owns the store that I'm going to shop, I'm going to be less likely to steal, for example, or less likely to cause problems there? Is that part of what we're talking about as well?
Well, ideally, that would be the situation, but unfortunately, the reality does not comport with that. Now, I want to state this in terms of inclusion, just like I said before. Now, when I'm on the ground, I'll make it a point to speak to the young people. What are older people, too? I don't see as many of them walking, but the young people, I always make sure that I let them know, yes, I see you, and yes, I know that you are a person of worth. 20 years ago, and I keep telling people this, I'm just saying people generally, you know, they knock rap music, even though it's here to stay. But 20 years ago, Tupac said it best, that no one notices the youth unless we're shooting. Well, he was saying 20 years ago that if you don't let us in, if you don't acknowledge us, we will get your attention.
Right.
And in many ways, the proliferation of violence, violent crimes on the East Side is a direct reflection of that statement, of that lyric. Tupac, Me Against the World, is what the song was. So in terms of where we're trying to go, were it up to me, I would be pushing for developmental type programs at the elementary school level so that the child could more easily be introduced to these principles. With me not being a policy setter per se, what I do from my individual standpoint, the things that my father say about doing everything within the neighborhood, I actually live that, because as I came up, my father taught me how to work with my hands as well as to work with my mind. And throughout the years, I've had two or three small businesses of my own in my own neighborhood, photography, paint a house, cut grass, work on cars, buy, trade, sell cars, buy, trade, sell cell phones, buy, trade, sell bikes. Currently, I have a small landscaping route that I maintain for family and personal friends, and I do this work for them as a courtesy, and they allow me to take money away from their premises as a courtesy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm getting a little long in the tooth to be pushing the line more, so for the past couple of years, I've tried to engage the younger people, younger persons, male or female, makes me no difference, to groom a junior high school age person to take over the route. And after I go with them one summer, the next summer, that person would be prepared to be a business owner, mm-hmm. with an eye toward buying a house and being able to pay for it. And the bills, you know, your bills, and you building up your reputation,
right.
in the community. No, you build up your reputation in the community first as a person of worth,
mm-hmm.
who's not taking away from the community, but instead investing in the community. But that's just the effort that I'm working on my level. And it's not to run counter to my father's efforts and or the overall mission and policy statement of the organization.
So, and I guess we're going to break in about 50 seconds for a station break. This is a call-in show. If you want to participate in the conversation, 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. I guess when I envisioned our conversation, part of it was trying to understand the outside forces, if you will, that make this dream or this goal that you have more difficult to achieve. That's part of what I was envisioning, but it sounds to me like in addition to the outside forces, there's plenty of inside forces independent of those outside forces potentially that make it difficult to achieve. Or am I wrong about that?
No, I mean, you're right on the one hand, you're wrong on the other, because throughout history, man has always overcome in the face of overwhelming odds, irregardless of his circumstances. It could be Denzel Washington. It could be Jamie Foxx.
Right.
You know, now, Denzel Washington credits the Boys Club for, right. for his success. Jamie Foxx does the same thing. And, so, okay.
Go ahead, and I'll, let me cut you off, and I'll tell you why I've been told we have to break. When we come back, I want to finish your thought, T, and then I want to hear about what the term community means in terms of trying to bridge the racial divide that we've seen in this last election. You're listening to Jaws of Justice on 90.1 KKFI.
Now, the calendar for November 14th. The U.S. Drone War, An Insider Speaks Out. Sponsored by Peaceworks KC on Wednesday, November 16th at 7 p.m. at All Souls Church, 4501 Walnut, KCMO. A talk by Cian Westmoreland, a former Air Force communication technician who worked on the drone program. He has the courage to speak out against the drone war despite suffering from PTSD. For information, contact Ann at 913-271-7925 or by email at Ann Suellen, that's A-N-N, S-U-E-L-L-E-N at gmail.com or check out Peaceworks KC on Facebook. Representative Brandon Ellington's 5th annual basketball tournament to feed the hungry will be held Wednesday, November 16th, 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. at Brush Creek Community Center, 3100 East Cleaver 2 Boulevard, KCMO. Tournament entry for teams is 5 turkeys, or 1 turkey per player. Sign up is at 5:30 p.m., game time 6 p.m. Admission to games is a minimum of 4 canned goods, or coats, hats, gloves, or toys. The KCMO Public Library presents Devery S. Anderson, author of the highly acclaimed book, Emmett Till, The Murder That Shocked the World and Propelled the Civil Rights Movement. He will speak with Library Director Crosby Kemper III, 6:30 p.m. at the Central Library, located at 10th and Main KCMO. You should call 816-701-3407 to reserve your seat. The Care of Poor People Winter Survival Event will be held Saturday, November 26th, noon to 4 p.m. at the Scottish Rite Temple, 1330 East Linwood Boulevard, KCMO. COP Incorporated is in need of volunteers on Friday, November 25th, and Saturday, November 26th, for the event. If you have items to donate or want to volunteer, call Keith L. Tripp at 417-461-4372 or George Arnold at 913-568-5786. My name is Jeff Humfeld, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. Tune in next week when host Margo Patterson takes on the free speech controversy at the library and host Beth Pike talks with truckers against trafficking. Now, back to David Bell and his guest.
This is David Bell. You're listening to Jaws of Justice on 90.1 KKFI. We're here with Mr. Bibbs Sr. and T. T, you wanted that song played. What was that song and why did you want it played?
As a black man, and I'm not saying this for controversial purposes, but just because it's a true statement, I am a black man. The opening refrain of that song captures perfectly the struggle that the black man lives with every day. It makes no difference who's in the White House, because for the person that high up, he never even sees the black man on the street. This is the what this is one of the points made by the book by Ralph Ellison so long ago, The Invisible Man. Not to be political or be religious with this or be like I'm trying to be a role model. I'd just like to say this, that in this country, in the current political climate, the black man is the only individual who leaves his house at the beginning of the day with knowledge that he may not make it home that night. Whether he dies in the street or whether he spends life without parole behind bars just for coming out of his house that day, he lives with that knowledge in the back of his mind. Nobody can say what exactly was going on in the minds of those who have passed under these circumstances I describe now, but every time that a situation like that comes on the news, the black man who listens to it thinks, I could be next.
And it would seem, we were talking about outside and inside influence that make the development or continued development of the community more difficult. It would seem that fear, that knowledge, and then the fear that comes with it, the anxiety, would just act as a tremendous weight on the shoulders of anyone feeling that, such that you walk around with just this additional weight on your shoulders. It makes every single movement that much more difficult.
You think?
Right.
But more on a more serious note, it touches on every decision that you make.
Right.
When you go into the bank, and you don't have a lot of money there, but what little bit you got, you like to access it. And as soon as you go through the door and the little buzzer or whatever alerts the security guard, and he looks in your direction, first thing he does instinctively is put his hand on his gun. The grocery store, the department store, in some cases the gas station. Well, so not so much the gas station. What you got to worry about there is a guy who's trying to put the arm on you for loose change, but neither here nor there. But, yeah, I liken it to having a toothache that's not quite so bad that you rush to the dentist. You know you got to go get it pulled eventually, but just not today. In the meantime, every day your jaw is aching. And, I mean, that's not the best analogy, but it's just something that's always with you. It could be a corn. It could be a callus on your foot or whatever. It could be your knee is twisted, but it's just a pain that's constantly with you.
If you could allow me to elaborate on that, your recent news and the demonstrations that are taking place in the various countries as a result of this presidential election and the fears that the demonstrators express, some Hispanic, particular about the deportation thing and so forth. What a black man experiences is all your life, that no matter these other fears are on you, but that last fear that is constantly with you as a result of being black in this society is that it is constantly with you, in addition to know what else you have to face. Thereby, the only differentiation between you and the other, perhaps, immigrants, as they complain about this plight of what may be presidential and other thing. With us, this thing is a constant. It's in all your life. So it's something that, in addition to the rest of the struggle of living every day, you've got to dance around the component and do things accordingly so that you don't befall victim to this thing that's already there waiting for you. So this is an extra task that is, it's insurmountable to live with. And this is my demonstration to people who, you may complain about things in a society, but many are people-oriented. And there again, it goes back to the trust of what Palestine is trying to exhibit and why we want to build just community with people so that they grow up in this community and try to remove these barriers, particularly the young people's way of thinking about it and having to worry about it. to soften the blow, so to speak, and to show them a different path of existing in the society with other people, community.
Is there a place or a thing or something you can do that for a moment can relieve you of that year-round thing you're talking about? Is there something, just for, even for a momentary escape, something that you can engage in?
There used to be an escape for this, say a momentary, that you could go to the basement in your residence and stay there. I mean, now don't go outside. But what is beginning to happen, and we're seeing more and more of, particularly with these young children and babies who are being slaughtered in the street, so forth, is that you're not safe anywhere. When your children are not safe, when your babies are not safe, there is no refuge anywhere that you can pick. This, we are trying to build a community that will be free from these fears, if at all possible. And this is our thrust of building our community, to get them engaged in a different direction, to speak. All who live there, let's say that we're a community, we are one. Mm-hmm. And if you're one, you wouldn't want to shoot yourself.
Right.
See? This is our thrust of engagement.
Okay. See, you had a comment.
Okay, conversely, there is some place that the young people go now. They called it, what do they call it? Just getting high. Whether it's alcohol, whether it's illicit narcotics, whether it's pharmaceuticals, or whether it's simply marijuana. But this is the escape now. There used to be a time when the person would just, you know, you just got to take the hit. I don't care what happened. It's your situation. You got to take the hit. Now, I've listened to you cry the blues. I can't fix it. It's your situation. You got to take the hit. Nobody wants to take the hit. I don't care. It could be a politician. It could be somebody from the clergy. It could be somebody from government. It could be the owner of the local store. You catch anybody wrong now, the first thing they want to do is give me an excuse. Nobody wants to say,
"It's my fault.
You got me.
Right.
What can I do to make it right?" Now, you asked before the break, you asked about what it takes to make a community. From my perspective, and only mine, I think that first the person has to be in the mind of community-minded, not just I got mine, you got to get your own. Well, once you get yours, you're pretty cool. You could break a little of yours off and put it into the community center or put it into the community pot or what have you, and you're still going to be good. First, you got to get the community mind. If you get the mind, the body will follow. You got two young guys. I was one of them at one time. They hustle together. Whether it's stealing or robbing or whatever the hustle was. For whatever reason, one of the guys gets religion, one of them gets scared straight. You know, there's some tragedy in the family, makes him want to do things different. So he starts doing things different. Well, his buddy's like, "Man, what's up? Are we going to get this money or not?" And his buddy says to him, he says, "You know what, man, I look at it now today, all money's not good money. That money that you're trying to go get right there, to me, that's not good money." Well, the guy goes on his own to go get the money. And just like his buddy said, it goes horribly wrong.
Right.
So when that guy finally comes out of the funk, the fallout, he's like, "You know what? I'm ready to ride with you on this side of the street now." So you get a two-for-one like that. Now, that's just an example of one way it could start. It could be when the guy says he's ready to quit hustling, and his buddy says, "You know what? I'm ready to quit hustling too. What can we do together?" It could be the guy's grandmother.
But I guess, and this is, again, this is David Bell. You're listening to Jaws of Justice on 90.1 KKFI. If you have a comment, you can call in at 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. You know, when we were talking about community, though, T., I want to widen the reach, if you will, and to the extent that I just came to some understanding of various lyrics. I remember one of a weight on your shoulders must weigh a ton. It's a lyric from a song, and so I just came to some understanding of that briefly here in the radio show, and you called me out on it. You're like, great, David. So you, now the sky's blue. So what else you got?
Yeah.
But so that's not enough for community, obviously, right? But so what is it? So what is obviously just some understanding? White person understands something finally for a brief moment. That's not enough. And so what is it that we see this tremendous gulf, or at least I see it sometimes, between the East Side and Johnson County or whatever, Kansas City, Missouri? How do you build a community when you're not even living in the same geographic area, such that we're going to rub elbows at the same grocery store or at the gas station or at the church or even the community center? How is it that we build a community there?
Well, it can be done, but it can't be done in the manner in which you describe, because historically, the country was always set up for those who have and those who have not. And it's going to stay that way. I mean, this is the nature of a capitalist society. Notwithstanding that, if you take the capitalist component out of it, then people just get together in the same room and talk. It works great. But the building of the community is, in fact, it starts with one person at a time. Because everybody's not going to be of a community-minded spirit
right.
at any given time. There'll be one person in that room of 20 that will say something that the nature of that statement will be heard. It will be received by 10, not 19, but 10 of those remaining 19 people. And of those 10, 5 will actually embrace it, to give support to this one person's vision. But when you trace it back, that building of that playground or whatever it is that happens through the community structure will be credited to one person as having gotten the ball rolling. Now, in the course of those other 5 people, who will become 7, who will become 9, until you get maybe 17 of the 20, because somebody's always going to hold out. Those people who get behind the idea will in turn relate the idea to somebody else, and it'll go out, and it'll go out, and eventually it'll get all the way out to Johnson County. And some, I'm telling you, somebody
it'll in get, Johnson it'll County, get pulled over when it crosses over state line, but then it'll be allowed to go on its way. But go ahead.
In any event, the person in Johnson County will say, you know what? I'm going to get behind that.
Right.
And this is how Johnson County meets the East Side, you see. Well, you know, the hardest part about this thing even happened is that 2 people to have a discussion, and for whatever reason, one person insists that the glass is half empty, and another person insists that the glass is half full. Until each of those people can reverse their position right. to embrace that other person's position, it's difficult. It's not impossible for those 2 people to work together. But I cannot dig my heels in on the sand, in the sand, and truly listen to what you are saying to me. You cannot dig your heels into the sand and truly listen to what I'm saying to you. When the one person talks to the other person, the ideas and concepts that either of them hold may be foreign to that other person, but to the person who's speaking, they are as real as the nose on that person's face. This is things that the person, me and my father talk about the things that we have actually lived through and experienced, where the person listening, you can look and just see in their eyes that they don't really believe it. You know, they think you're making a story up out of whole cloth. It's not a matter of believing what I'm saying. All I want you to do is just listen to it. I want you to just hear it, just receive it. Because your opinion on my comments and statements about summations are yours and yours alone, and I'm not here to try to change or influence them. But if you invite the person to come and talk, then give that person the courtesy of listening to them. And this is the thing that my father mentioned about the disconnect between the organizations, community organizations, or the institutions, and the youth.
Right.
Because you're not speaking in the language of the youth. When the older person refuses to listen to rap music and actually vilifies it, denigrates it, the young person's position is, you telling me that my language is foreign to you and you don't even want to try to learn it. You know, every adult that's talking to a young person should be able to make a statement of some authority on at least two rappers. And I'm not talking about Will Smith. You know what I mean?
Hey, yeah. By the way, could you please complete the? Because this is one of the wonderful things you mentioned about the. You can say the glass is half empty. I can say the glass is half full. But we can at least agree on what one thing. And this is
there's water in the glass.
There's water in the glass.
And, so, that there is a glass.
And that there is a glass. Right. All right. So there's two things we can agree on. But so, and I've always appreciated that you brought that up when we've in our conversations before. So Mr. Bibb Sr., what? I guess if I wanted to go to somebody in Johnson County, pick them up there and look at them and say, all right, go make a community in Kansas City, meaning all of Kansas, just Kansas City proper, the metropolitan area. What is it I tell them physically to do? Like I say, all right, step one, you need to do this. What is that? And
as the species that we are, there are more things that we have in relationship to one another that we share commonly than we do not. That is first. As human beings, we all have the same needs. That binds us together. Thereby is our likeness, our desires as well as our wants and not wants bind us together as people. We all have the only differences between human beings are these things that would be considered minute compared to the greater things that bind us together.
Almost things that we've created ourselves through some type of societal interaction. Would that be? Let me. By the way, we have a caller on the line. Caller, please state your name, where you're calling from, and your brief comment.
This is Kurt from the East Side. And I feel what I almost hesitate to interrupt the gentleman speaking. It's wonderful to hear them talk. As a person who grew up in the white community, there's lots of stories in the white community that are just not true. I think both of you kind of understand what capitalism is, but you have to understand it as a myth. I mean, the truth is we're all human beings, but there's capitalists, and I'm not saying that in trying to make it as there's. So socialism is correct. No, the truth is what he said. We're all human beings. You know, I come at it from a scientific perspective. I've worked on human beings, and yeah, that's the truth. And our society, I don't know if it may never get to the point where we are human beings first and the other stories are second. There's so much allegiance out there to these other stories, and I'll quit. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Bibbs, if you could... So then what's one, Mr. Bibb Sr., what is one thing then that we could, based upon these common these common things that are hardwired into us, the need to, I think, to be loved, the need to eat, the need to sleep, the need to be housed, I don't know what it is, the need to be a community, it may be inherent in all of us, or innate in all of us.
That is where we come to the teaching component, to schools, children, and living in a community that is diverse. Good, which we have that now in a time in history where this is thrust up on us. This is the local gas station, the local grocery store. People of all ethnicities walk into these stores, and these stores are in the community. So these people come together. We look to those things that are greater that bind us all together rather than those things that tear us apart little by little.
It's almost as if the community center serves as an example of what you would like to see duplicated over and over again, whether in by a grocery store, a gas station, church, whatever it may be. This is the template that we're hoping people will use, so that, and we have all of these different interactions throughout a day that ultimately is what binds the community together as a community.
That's right.
So we have another caller on the line, and then this will be our last caller, and then I'll. We have two callers on the line. Go ahead, caller. You're on the line. State your name and where you're calling from. All right, we don't have that caller. Next caller. Caller, you're on the line. State your name and where you're calling from.
This is Ace from downtown.
Go ahead, Ace.
I just want to say that I really appreciate the conversation. I think one thing that's been said is that although that we are human, that is true, and race is a construct, we have to remember traffic signals are also a construct. You know, you don't have to obey that construct, but if you run that red light, there's a possibility you're going to get hit by a car. So we need to remember that not everyone experiences the world as a human, and that sometimes when we talk about looking at the world through a human, we look at it through a colorblind white gaze. So let's just remember that when we're having these discussions. And I think you should constantly, as a white person or as white male, constantly remind your listeners and your audience that they should attend things like showing up for racial justice so that they can understand the world we live in, especially with your new president.
All right. Thank you, Ace. We have one more caller, and we'll stop with that, and then I'll make a final comment, and then I'd ask that T and Mr. Bibbs Sr. close out we'll do this. We'll take a caller, and then I'll have you guys talk, and I'll give a real quick final comment. Caller, you're on the line. State your name and where you're calling from.
Hello. Thank you. This is Imani calling, and one of the people there asked, you know, what one thing can they do? I believe in doing really practical things. I have a prison ministry, and I work with Connections to Success. They help people re-enter into society after being incarcerated. And all they're asking from the community is that the mentors just talk to these people. That's all they want, is for you to talk to them. They just need somebody to talk to. They don't know anything about how to send an email or how to connect with certain things. Connections for Success does everything else. They find them housing. They find them a job. They find clothes. All they need is someone to talk to. And if you contact Connections to Success, that's a great way for you to not only understand another person's struggle, but for you to do something really practical to help someone who's fallen through the cracks.
Thank you very much for your call. And before I forget, I need to say hello to Nina, who's listening, Michael, and Kathy. T, if you want to give a final comment, and then I'll let Mr. Bibbs have the ultimate final comment, and I'll close out at that point.
Okay. All right. One thing before I get started. I want the ultimate final comment as far as that goes. But anyway, Monty, I want to really thank you for calling in, because you're the first female who's taking the time to call in, and I really appreciate that, to hear opinions from a different perspective. And I'll definitely be reaching out to you. To the other two callers, I did issue a disclaimer at the beginning of the show that we were not here to cause controversy, and I've deliberately tried to stay away from making my comments be racial in nature, and I don't think I said anything about white versus black, but if I did, I want to issue a blanket apology to anybody that I may have offended, because that was not my intent. Dad?
From the conversation and the callers that you had, I appreciate your callers and who are aware of the situations that are going on. And we seek counsel in ways to address these issues where people do differ. But our thrust in the Palestine area is to bring all these components together and to utilize those services and so forth, and community people who are interested, to bring this community concept together and to work with us on this concept. We invite you all to come to Palestine, see us and hear us, and work with us in any way that you can.
Great. I want to thank my guests, Mr. Bibbs Sr. and T. I'm hopeful to have both of you on again on the next show. And with that, this is David Bell. You're listening to Jaws of Justice on 90.1 KKFI.
It's the 420 Drug War News. The following is taken from a conference held last week, put together by the Drug Policy Alliance and TheRoot.com. The topic of discussion, drug war, police killings on down the line, and what about women who get caught up in the drug trade or find themselves without resources? This is Deborah Small, a fellow with Johns Hopkins University.
The thing that I learned from my experience with Green Hope is that the main issue women had was not getting off of drugs.
Mm-hmm. It was about rebuilding their lives.
Yeah.
And so to me, you know, we ask the wrong questions. It's like, I often think that it's unreasonable to expect people to be clean and sober just to go back to miserable, abusive lives that they had before they started using drugs. So mm-hmm. that's one thing. Mm-hmm. But more specifically,
maybe more sense to not be sober.
Well, we act as if using drugs is not a rational response.
That's right. That's right.
To the lives that people are living.
That's
and
right.
That if we, and that criminalizing it only makes it worse. But there are three things in particular that I think that as a policy solution, because I'm a policy person, would make a big difference for women. One is this. Women should never, ever be incarcerated. If we thought of prisons as the scarce resource that they are, because they cost a lot of money. Okay, they really do. They cost a lot of money. So if we saw it as a scarce resource, as something that you use as the last resort, then women should never be incarcerated unless they pose a risk to themselves or others, mm-hmm. which would get rid of more than 85% of the women that we have behind bars right now mm-hmm. if we had that as a rule. Number two, we should never lock a person up more than 100 miles away from where they committed their crime, which would do a lot to make sure that people could have their families together. And then the third thing that I think is really important for our audience to think about is that every single state in this country will spend more money to keep a person behind bars than they will to feed a family of four.
That's right.
Now, we know that poverty is feminized in this country, mm-hmm. that the majority of the people who are poor, who are living in poverty, are women with children. And yet we do not in any single state give enough welfare benefits to put a family at the poverty level, mm-hmm. but we will spend more than that to keep them behind bars. And to me, that is a statement about who we are as a society, what we prioritize, what we think is important, which is not investing in people, not supporting families, not protecting women, but punishing them and extorting from them and extracting from them and then blaming them for their own conditions. Mm-hmm.
And now this,
opening up a can of worms and going fishing for truth. This is the Drug Truth Network, drugtruth.net.
Dean Becker, drugtruth.net.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the host and the guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, or its staff and volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show episodes and podcasts on the Jaws of Justice Radio page on Facebook. If you have a show idea or you want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. And you can always listen to us live on the KKFI website at kkfi.org. This is your engineer for Jaws of Justice Radio, Beth Pike. And be sure to tune in Thursday mornings at 6 a.m. when I host the Thirsty Thursday edition of your Morning Buzz. Our outro music is Better Man, and that's from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Khadija and the White Guy at 9 a.m. on Thursdays, and then Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 on Fridays. Up next is Beautician's Blues. That's with Luscious Lynn. And then at noon, it's Arts Magazine with Michael Hogue. You'll want to stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon, and then Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Round out your day south of the border with Fiesta Musical, Compartiendo en Familia, and Compartiendo en Noche.